wire was underneath.
Trying to.
And I said, what's wrong with the system? And I said,
testing one, two. If there's anyone out there listening, you could send me a message. I'm going to open the chat room. The funny thing is, why am I not seeing my chat room? There it is. We'll open that. Hello, Ed. Welcome.
I'll even pay for it, okay? Okay, go to their website.
Yes, they went on for over a year.
That's not bad.
They're not very good.
I'm going to take them
off.
They have too much money.
Oh, yeah.
You know how to edit them and make them better?
We can do some stuff to them, but
I don't know if they're worth it.
It's always better to take a better picture than it is to try and fix it later.
Mr. Smartphone guy. What should this be said on so that the glare in the background goes away?
Oh. That's a good question.
Ask it January 10th.
A good question. What you could do is you could ignore the glare, maybe, by, you see this? You see where the,
I don't have any insurance.
That is an exposure. And you can adjust the exposure level.
Oh, okay.
Right, so it's doing an auto exposure based on where I put my finger, and then you can scroll up or down to lower and raise the exposure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Don't tell Ray, or that's going to be another question on the cell phone.
Amazon.
Oh, these colors are horrible. If anybody's paying any attention, I'll be back in a moment. Let's stop this. And stop this. That's B. That's A. A looks pretty good. Yeah. Look at what? Yeah, it's all filled up now. Look at that.
I told you.
People are here. People are here. Okay, that's this. That is.
Well, you are acceptable, right?
So close.
I'll send them to you and you can decide.
Do you want the high chair?
Oh, I know that.
Right here?
No, I don't have any.
And deactivate and disconnect. And table A.
Don't tell me your problems. I have my own.
And go over here.
Don't you go take care of them.
And come on, do what you're supposed to do. There we go.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
That looks good. Let's plug this one in.
You always talk to yourself?
I do. Actually, it drives people crazy. So often I'll be sitting in front of somebody's computer and I'll be asking questions to the air. And there's a customer behind me trying to answer these impossible questions to answer because I'm asking them to myself. I definitely don't expect other people to be able to answer them. It's become such a personal habit that now when I go into an environment like that, I tell them straight up, you don't have to pay any attention to me. I think out loud. That's right. I think out loud. It's my process. There is not a question I'm going to ask that you need to answer. Well, you gotta go like this, Maggie.
Touching the screen.
Yeah.
When I turn it sideways.
You could have sat here.
If you tap it, yeah, the option comes up, and then you can scroll up and down with your finger. Okay.
that's a better picture.
Oh yeah, it is.
We're gonna
almost better. Okay. Yeah. But almost 99% of the people do them this way.
I do.
I do.
Everybody.
I have to learn to do it the other way now.
And it's very difficult then to make a slideshow out of those kinds of things.
We're gonna go to
so
or even print.
Oh, I'm working.
There we go.
There's so many good things you learn.
No.
What's the
knife? I put you out to take the book across the border.
I was the grandkids were in Chicago.
Have you had trouble?
Yeah, I was just describing
that. 5 years ago. So I've been here and I've no more.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
What was the problem?
Well, do you read Viva?
Between the airport and
I've already experienced 4.5 hours at the border going into the United States.
That's true. That's true. And it did happen.
All right, everybody's involved in the process now. If anybody was out there watching that, that was me getting cameras ready.
We're all soul timers.
And
yeah, the old truck route is the one that we used to go.
Okay.
The new one we built.
Where is that?
I think we should be ready to go. I think everything's actually working. Slightly surprising.
Looks like they're trying to start the meeting and I don't want to interfere.
That's all right. It would be par for the course. No one's interfering. But we are ready to start. And we have a smaller group today because, well, it's the holidays. So I suspect people are with their respected families. But I am Scott Stimson, and you are the San Carlos Computer Club. And we meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15-ish here in Tequila's in San Carlos. And solve the world's tech problems one question at a time. And I'm happy to be with you guys. There's a couple of things that I feel like I should mention right off the start is just a reminder that we won't meet next Tuesday because it's Christmas. Aww. And we won't meet the Tuesday after that because it's New Year's. I know you were expecting me as a Christmas present, but that is not going to happen. I will be in Arizona. We're going up to Pine Top and taking the kids to the snow, something we do every other year.
No.
Do some snowboarding, hopefully. I need to mention the cell phone for dummies or the smartphones for dummies. This is what the promotion looks like. Doing through the Club Deportivo, I will be talking about smartphones. They're going to start it. We're going to start at 7 o'clock on January 10th. Yeah, January 10th. So everybody's welcome to join us. Hopefully, I will do it justice. The promotions look really beautiful.
And that's a Thursday night, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it a Thursday night?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't say it here. Right? It's January 10th.
Live with it.
Okay. I'm going to assume it's a Thursday night. I haven't looked at a calendar. It's January 10th.
Yes, it is a Thursday.
Okay.
7 o'clock. That's kind of late, isn't it?
Well, they have a bar.
And it will be open.
All proceeds go to a charity, Castaway Kids.
Good charity.
I shouldn't say all proceeds, but there's definitely this large portion that goes to... I don't know how that works, right?
I don't either.
Okay.
I just do the artwork.
The largest percentage goes to Castaway Kids. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Looks
and
like
this is part of the series.
Home, too.
That say that again, Robin?
It looks like they're getting a new home. I see their banner, the new building that's being built to the east.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Looks like they've got more room. They've actually got a roof. It hasn't blown off.
I mean, Club Deportivo's getting a new building.
No. Castaway Kids is moving locations.
They've already got that.
Yeah. Okay, I want to do a little follow-up on things we've talked about in the past. Last week and the week before, we've been talking about the Epic browser for VPN and privacy. And there was a question last week about LastPass. And I verified that the Epic browser does have an add-on shop. It is sparse. There is not a lot of things in the add-on shop. But it does include a LastPass add-on. So if you are interested in using LastPass, it is available in, if you're interested in the Epic browser, it is available for the Epic browser. It does work. I installed it, verified that it will sign you in. If you spend any time working with LastPass, you'll learn over time there are websites that are hit and miss, whether it's going to sign you in automatically or not. But it definitely worked for my Gmail account and worked for my Facebook account.
Does Google have something similar?
Google has an authenticator that I have not played with. And Microsoft has an authenticator as well. I think it's called the Microsoft Authenticator. And it's an app that you install that saves passwords. That's right. I can't remember Google's authenticator. It can be a proper noun and it can be a noun. I don't remember the name of Google's authenticator. But it seems like Microsoft's authenticator is called Microsoft Authenticator. Again, given the comparisons out there in the security community, the best recommendation I've ever heard is for LastPass, because they are comparing this against those other authenticators that exist. So I thought that answered the question. If you're interested in the Epic browser, it does include the plugin for LastPass, and it does work. They have an app store. What also, there was another question about Chrome add-ons and extensions. Because Epic is based on Chromium, it is compatible with the Chrome extensions. But what is obvious is they have to be built for Epic as well. If you go to Chrome's app store or add-on store or extension store, I don't even remember the right terminology now, it's full of thousands of add-ons you can add features to the Chrome browser. If you go to Epic Browser's add-on store, there is probably less than a dozen. They're all right there. That's it. There's no more. So it's obvious that maybe they are compatible, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be an add-on for it. Their add-on manufacturer has to build it for Chrome. What's going on here?
I forgot to do it before you started. I apologize.
This is Maggie's.
This is worth interrupting for. Maggie's passing out chocolate.
Yeah. And I have another bag, so don't.
Thank you.
If it's empty when it gets here, I have another bag. Sorry, Scott.
No worries. I got two other topics that I think you all will be interested in. I looked up. Thank you. Thank you for providing the TCS information. I have been talking to TCS.
Oh, okay.
Good.
What is TCS?
Good.
Oh, you had it installed yesterday? And you asked for it to be installed. Is it installed?
It's installed.
Is it working?
It's working. It still wasn't strong enough to reach the living room, so I still have to use that other...
Right, you would have to. Yeah.
But 21 downloads...
Yeah, and what about the upload? That's the
upload was one something, and I was talking to Hector, and they upped it to what?
Four and a half.
Four and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So that sounds like a good option. They sent me the
for what?
The plans. This is for internet other than this is for satellite internet.
Well, they have a tower on H.
Oh, okay. So they're at
line of sight.
Line of sight.
And then he said that goes to satellite.
And that goes to satellite.
When I do my speed check, it says megacable.
Oh, there's plenty more.
Oh, that's interesting.
Send them around.
So that scares me.
So, and I'm waiting for the question about the up speed. But you guys are saying it's 1 to 4. You're able to.
Well, I guess they say 2, but he did something, and we got over 4, almost 5 out of it. So.
Okay, it may be a combination. It may be a combination down on satellite, out on mega cable. That's definitely a way that Hughes stuff has worked in the past.
This is what
out on mega cable.
Yeah.
Two.
So I couldn't do it.
No, all that's handled by the provider. All you get is a dish on your or an antenna on your house.
And a router.
Yeah. I'm just speculating on how they might be offering it. Like you'd said that there was a tower.
Yeah.
Christine said there was a tower out there that had a satellite on it. So it's being beamed to them, probably a specific microwave, to and from that tower. And then that tower is what's got the satellite dish connection. And so I was speculating it could use a satellite to bring internet down and then use a local internet provider to send it out so that they could give you the best speeds both directions.
You said they had 600 megabytes of bandwidth, and it was everybody had a proprietary use of a certain amount, and that's it. So they don't overload the bandwidth.
Mm.
You're guaranteed that you're going to get what they say.
Well, that's great. They sent me a picture that's their home plans, and on it, it says 10 megabits, a 10 megabit plan, a 15 megabit plan, and a 20 megabit plan. 10 megabits for 500 pesos a month. That's comparable to Telmex. There's a lot of people out there paying around 500 a month and getting just about 10 megabits a second. There are people like Jim that's probably paying that and getting 20 megabits a second. 30 megabits a second. But there are people like in Loma del Mar that are obviously getting 4 to 5 megabits a second, and they'd be happy to pay 500 to get 10 megabits a second. So that's a decent price. And they say it's unlimited data, so there is no bandwidth cap. You can use it as long as you want. It's not like your cell phones. It's not like Hughes has been in the past. So
the problem, Scott, is you're going to have to come back and fix my VPN, my DNS proxy.
Oh, is it not working?
Well, I can't figure out how to do it.
Okay.
Anyway, no rush.
Yeah, their equipment should have been able to be plugged right into your equipment.
Yeah, he actually used the cabling from Juan's Expo.
Yeah, no, it should plug into that router in the back, and then so you should have the same Wi-Fi network name.
And I'm getting different shows on Netflix than I was getting before they did that. So
I wonder if smart, this is an interesting thing to, I wonder if smart DNS will work in this arrangement.
Mm. Well, you'd have to update it.
Right, right.
Yeah, I did update it. Yeah, because we've been watching a show called Shameless with William H. Macy.
Yeah.
It is shameless. And I went to watch another episode yesterday, but it's totally different characters.
Whoa, really?
It's like a Mexican version. Which was weird.
Well, there's an English version that the American version's based on.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an English version. That's funny. Well, let me reiterate. 10 megabits for 500, 15 megabits for 700, 20 megabits for 900.
Are you saying that there are different kinds of microwaves?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
You said something about specific as far as communication, like the microwave for our microwaves in our house to heat things.
Oh, well, it is the same microwaves that we use for heating food. It's in the same range that's called microwaves that we use for broadcasting. They're narrow, like condensed. Well, that's what makes them, gives them the term microwave, is that there's so many waves within a smaller, so many waveforms within. Well, I don't understand the question. I mean, there's this frequency range from light to microwaves. That's all radio waves. And we do. We heat food within the same frequency spectrum that we transmit data at. The difference is where the beams are focused.
No wonder we get hot.
It's hot food.
Are Juan and his brother involved in this, or are they? They're not part of it.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. This is somebody from Hermosillo.
This is somebody from Hermosillo, and so. I haven't heard back from him yet, but I've asked him if he wouldn't mind coming in and answering some of our questions about this service.
That would be kind of nice.
Is that Hector?
It's not Hector, but I would be happy to have Hector come in and talk to us about it as well. I'm assuming Hector's just reselling it here, and I assume that if he's a reseller of theirs, then they're going to recommend Hector to come in and talk to us. He's another tech. I at the moment I'm forgetting our bio. Like, yeah. He's a real nice guy. He's bilingual. He has experience.
If and when he shows.
He's got a lot of experience. He worked IT for Maculas in the past, and now he does the same thing I do. He does outsourced IT. In fact, I've used him before in emergency circumstances. He's a good guy. Just stories like that. he typically knows what he's talking about, though. So anyway, yeah, just as a follow-up on satellite internet, there does appear to be a definite option. If you're living in an area around here where you're getting lousy internet, you have the potential of getting better internet through satellite.
Tekeli,
if you're in the back 40 of Tekeli,
yeah.
You're getting lousy internet, this could be an option.
I'm getting about three.
Three?
Yeah. Three and a half,
Robin, is that kind of what you're getting to? Is about 3 or 4
yeah,
megabits?
That's it.
So, you know what would be interesting is I wonder if you guys could team up on like a 20 megabit a second plan and share it.
Maybe. That would be nice.
You know, that used to be a real common thing to do around here when like high-speed internet was so expensive. You'd get a group of neighbors to just all pitch in and set up a Wi-Fi access point everybody used. All right, have I hit every... I've got one more topic that I thought you guys would find interesting. It's a quick one. This one is a suggestion from my daughter, Bibi, who is 11 years old and blew me away that she figured this out on her own. She suggests that if you're using a mobile device and you are getting advertising for an app that is driving you crazy because they won't leave you alone, install the app. It'll go away.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And if you combine this topic with what we were talking about a few weeks ago, where an uninstaller is being tracked, and I'm still waiting to watch this come to a head, but we discovered about a month ago that if you're an uninstaller, you're put on a list to be promoted to by that same app and partners of that app. And so so I imagine she installed the app at one time, whatever app we're talking about, and decided, she told me, it's a horrible app, it's really boring. And so she uninstalled it. Well, then she couldn't get away from the advertising. The advertising was everywhere. This is my 11-year-old daughter. And so she finally just installed the app and ignores the app and is no longer bothered by their advertising.
Well, how do we do this?
Well, first of all, you have to be bothered by an advertiser that is consistent. And in this case, and I've seen it myself, there is some advertising out there specifically for apps and games that consists of like a 30-second to a minute roll of footage. That's fine the first time it happens to you, but if it happens every time you go to do something, you're getting hit with a 30-second video. It would be nice for that to just go away. At least be some other content.
Yeah, mine is doing that day and night.
Okay, be specific. No.
And so...
So what are we...
No, well, so what she's saying is that app, install it.
What is it?
No, there is... I don't have a specific app to mention.
Whatever app
it is that's bothering you with advertising.
Oh, yeah. Install it and it goes away.
Install it and the advertising goes away. You will get other advertising, of course. And so I wouldn't do this for like a pop-up banner, but if you're using a web page or an app on your mobile device where every time you're opening it up, you're seeing a 30-second video roll of a particular app, and it's always the same app, you can install that app, and they'll stop bothering you.
Oh. That's interesting.
Mining your information.
They are mining your information. They're not supposed to. In fact, that's what I'm waiting to see come to a head right now, is that when you uninstall an app and when you don't use an app, you do not expect those app developers to be tracking your information. And what we discovered about a month ago, a little longer than a month ago, is that they are. That there are a number of businesses right now that have made it their business to sell the information of you not using apps, of you not, of you uninstalling apps, and of you using, leaving those apps on your platforms, and them continuing to track your movements and the things you do.
That's interesting. Yeah. I did uninstall something about a week ago.
Yeah.
And now I get all this 30-second stuff day and night.
For that same app?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. I don't. I have no idea what it is.
Okay.
It wakes me up at night. I put the phone out in the closet under a bunch of clothes.
Well,
because it kept bugging, and I couldn't turn it off.
I was blown away to have her tell me this. Because I had never had this conversation with her before, and she was just offhandedly remarking about what she'd done to get rid of this advertising. That's right.
She's preparing herself.
He needs to do it.
Well, you stay home.
Yeah.
Can't you just turn the phone
Real life advice from the trenches.
Turn it off.
Put it in the refrigerator.
Is Mojave a new
This is an Android.
Yes.
I turned it off.
Has it been proven? I mean, they wanted me to download it the other day, and then I thought twice.
Yeah, you're in no hurry.
Okay.
You're absolutely in no hurry. The standard advice with these updates for the desktop and laptop operating systems is wait at least 2 point releases. I think Mojave's 10.14. I would wait till 10.14.2 before I took it seriously.
Yeah.
Is it at 2 now? Yeah?
I've got it on and I haven't had a problem.
Yeah.
Don't put that out in the atmosphere.
Well, and that may be the case. There may not be problems with it. My advice to you folks is never be the guinea pig. There's just no reason for it. Leave it for hobbyists. Leave it for people that enjoy that kind of stuff. The last thing you want to do is turn on your computer and not have it turn on, right? Or have data lost like that Windows update that came out that few people got because they were going out looking for updates. And then what they found was everything in My Documents was deleted by accident.
But not everybody.
Not everybody. Just certain people that ran into that problem. But Microsoft's advice was call our 800, shut off your computer, call our 800 number. We will help you with this problem. And their help was, here's a free copy of Data Recovery. The reason you had to turn off your computer is because the longer you use it, the more likely you won't be able to recover your data. Because that's the kind of delete that happened. We moved it into the wrong folder. We're going to be able to get it back to you. It's, we legitimately deleted it. Now you legitimately need a data recovery tool to try and get back as much as was deleted. I think it goes without saying, everyone should have backups.
Backup, that's the key.
That is, in all these circumstances, the backup is what you should be running. And on both Macintosh and Windows, they have extremely easy backup systems to use now. You should have an external hard drive that you keep in a drawer, and you periodically plug it in and back up your computer. With that backup, then all these things can go wrong. But the last Macintosh update was High Sierra. High Sierra was released with an error. You can put encryption on external hard drives. Let's start with that. If you have a problem where you're concerned about the security of a backup getting lost, you can put encryption on your external hard drive. High Sierra was released with an error where, let me continue on that first thought. When you first plug in an encrypted hard drive, you're asked to put in the password for it. And quite literally, if you don't have the password for an encrypted hard drive, you're in trouble because all that data is unavailable. There is no way to break that password. If it's encrypted with a password, that hard drive is unreadable at this moment and into the near future without the password. So encrypting a hard drive is a big deal, and it's not a recommendation I make to any of my customers.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I purchased a solid-state 1 terabyte little external hard drive.
Yeah.
And every year for the last 5 years, at the end of the year, I back up all my files, and it holds all of that.
Yeah.
And then every 2 weeks, I back up the current ones. So the nice thing about that is if you've deleted a picture or an email or something over the, you can always go back and find it in a prior year.
Yeah, both Microsoft, both Windows and Macintosh have backup systems that allow you to maintain a history of changes. So you can go back to yesterday's version or last month's version. And so those are valuable tools you should be taking advantage of. But what I don't believe you should take advantage of is encryption on your hard drives. I believe that it is another one of these examples of security having to balance with convenience, and you can't afford the inconvenience of that much security. It's just not worth it to you. If something goes wrong with your computer, you don't need to be hearing a sad story from me how we can't recover the data because it's encrypted. Right? Now, there are people out there that need that kind of encryption. They need that kind of security. I'm saying most of us at this table don't. It would be nice if we could all take advantage of it, but what you're really giving up is this convenience factor of taking that hard drive and moving it to another computer and being able to get access to those files. Right? Being able to recover your computer when you have forgotten the encryption password that you set 6 months ago. Right? There's absolutely no reason to introduce that much inconvenience into your life. And so I do not recommend encryption. However, and what brought up this topic was we're talking about updates and when to do updates. High Sierra, when it was released, released it with an issue. When you plugged in your encrypted hard drive, it, as it should, prompted for the encryption password. But what we found was if you go to the hint feature, it would tell you the password. Right. In fact, what that is a real eye-opener of how lousy a job they implemented the authentication in High Sierra. Because nowhere in the system should the password exist. It should only exist as a hashed, encrypted password. Like, there shouldn't be a place where it's possible to present the actual password. If anything, it should have presented a ridiculous series of numbers that represented the password. Right? But in this case, and they immediately fixed it. The 0.1 release fixed that problem. But then the 0.2 release broke it again. So that's my justification for none of you folks need to be the guinea pigs for these systems. There's plenty of, your system will continue to work for quite a while without having the latest bleeding edge operating system on it. And I would wait. I would always wait point releases before I would update. And as a consequence, my main workhorse at home still runs Sierra on it because High Sierra left such a bad taste in my mouth with my customers that I did not want to update my system to it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I get to ask a dumb question, okay?
These are Macintosh operating systems. They used to do cats, and now they do locations.
Why is an external hard drive better than a thumb drive?
It's not necessarily. In fact, you could think of them at the same level, and the difference would be in the capacity and the price you pay. Because it's very easy now to...
No, it wasn't a dumb drive.
Right now, actually, it's a great question because you're comparing, when you're looking at external drives and external storage, you're looking at flash drives, which we think of as little thumb drives, and hard drives, which we think of as like a rectangle. Mm-hmm. The hard drives traditionally have been spinning drives, and spinning drives are moving parts.
Right.
Moving parts are cheaper because they wear out. The flash drives don't wear out. However, if there was a problem, they are so unlikely to have a problem. Hard drives that spin are much more likely to have a problem. But if you have a problem with flash memory, typically it's all or nothing. Whereas a spinning drive, you can typically recover data from that problem. That being said, your chances of having a problem with flash drives are much slimmer than having a problem with a spinning, moving hard drive.
Well, I'm happy to hear that because I'm locked out of my external hard drive.
Well, the external hard drive that I'm talking about is a terabyte.
Yeah.
That holds a lot more, but
And we are able to get terabyte flash drives now, and we're going to see 2 terabyte flash drives real quick.
Yeah, the problem with flash drive is where did I put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you put it?
No, where did I put it?
Yeah, where did I put it? That's right. I have a 256 gigabyte thumb drive and 128 gigabyte thumb drive. These are respectable sizes for a laptop, and they sit in a package this big. And that is the most important question: is where the hell did I put that?
I keep mine in my briefcase.
So I always know where you've been using on a Windows. Can you also use that same hard drive on a Mac?
On a Mac, yes, you can. Most of these removable drives get formatted as an EXFAT format. If you didn't format it yourself, it's probably using that format to begin with. It's very common in Microsoft world, but even in the Macintosh world, to maintain compatibility between the platforms, the go-to is this EXFAT format. Microsoft Windows will format at FAT32, which is essentially the same thing. The difference is the Mac won't. It'll read it, but it won't format at it, because to format at FAT32 is to admit Windows had a good idea, and they won't do it. But this XFAT format is an open source format, which is almost identical to the FAT32 format, and so they support that. Windows supports both, as well as NTFS, which is the Windows format. If you've got an external hard drive that's being used on either platform, there's a very good chance for backups. There's a very good chance it's formatted in its own format. On a Windows machine, it would be NTFS. On a Macintosh, up till recently, it would be this HFC journaled operating system that is a Macintosh format and can only be read by Macintoshes. Recently, they've changed to another only can be read by Macintosh's format. I think they call it AFS. I think that's what it's called. Apple File System. I think that's what it's called. Again, can only be read on Macintosh. These are hard drives that are being used for backup using the backup systems. So on Windows, it would be the Microsoft Backup and File History. On the Macintosh, it would be Time Machine. And those drives typically are difficult to read in another computer, in another format. But these drives that we just generically connect and move files to hand to somebody else, those are typically formatted in the EXFAT format. You bought it at Best Buy. It's already ready to go. You plug it in and you move some files over to it. That's typically the FAT format, and it can go between the two platforms without a problem. When you're buying a drive for backup and you don't want hassles with a Macintosh, look for one that's sold as a Macintosh backup drive. It'll already be formatted for a Macintosh. When you plug it in, it'll ask you if you want to use it for Time Machine. That drive is the one I'm talking. Would be difficult to move over to a Windows system, but its job is to do backups on a Macintosh, so it's the right kind of drive. If you want a drive to go back and forth between Macintosh and Windows, you can basically buy any drive out there. If it says it's for Windows, you're definitely going to be able to read it on the Macintosh. The NTFS file system from Windows right now can be read on Macintosh. It can be read, but it's hit or miss whether you can write to it. And there's a very good chance. The last time I installed Sierra, I had to install a third-party open-source NTFS file writer. It's like a driver to make it possible to move files over to that kind of disk. I don't expect most people to be able to do that, and that's why that's the kind of disk you would think of as not being completely compatible with a Macintosh file format. I hope that that overwhelms you with too much information, and that when you decide to do these things, you give me a call so I can sort you out.
I have a little comment if I could.
Sure, Chester.
When you're comparing the external hard drive that has a little cable and a USB plug, compared that to the thumb drive, I've had problems with the thumb drive and carry them in my pocket or elsewhere with breaking the connector. And I think it's better to have the drive that has a cable and a USB.
Well, some of them come with a little cap that slides down on it.
Yeah, if you can hide it, then that would be better. But otherwise
I'm exposed. I started buying the ones that you slide the cap up and down.
That would be better.
And Kingston has a really nice format that is a piece of aluminum. It's just an aluminum stick, and you can put it on a keychain. And it's really durable. I've been very impressed. I've got one. I was going to pull it out of my pocket, but it's on my other set of keys. Uh-huh. But it bangs around and gets beat up all the time, and it's continued to work without any kind of problem. And if I could say something about the cable problem, I watch people do this all the time with external hard drives and with their cell phones and with their tablets. They inadvertently leave their cable plugged in as they're moving around with it, as they're packing it up. I watch my kids do this all the time. At the very least, you're going to have an accident and you're going to break that cable. At the very worst, you're going to break the port in your device. Right? I mean, the cable, at least you can replace the cable, but the port, you're going to have to find somebody to fix that. That's an expensive problem.
And Apple solved that problem with the magnet.
Right. They've gone away from it.
Right.
Have you seen the advertisements that keep popping up online? The little animals that number you one, always put your one, cell phone one, charger in the right way.
Oh, well, what are they? It's like a little clip that tells you which direction's the right way to put it in. Yeah, you should never have a problem connecting a cable. You should always question whether it's plugged in correctly if you're having any issues plugging in a cable. Any issues, any kind of resistance, you should be looking in your port, and you should be looking in the port of the cable, because you can do some expensive damage by plugging it in wrong, and it's never hard. Let me see, anything you do, if you're pulling, as somebody that pulls apart equipment, it's never hard. It's complicated, but it's always easy when you figure it out. It's always little plastic clips that can break in a moment if you're not paying attention to them. It's always little delicate things that if you roughhouse, you've killed the device, because it's just a little plastic clip that's holding it on there. And I have discussed when we've had deinstallers working for us in the past, Sony and I have many discussions about how it's never hard to open a computer. It's just complicated. There's a little plastic clip over here and a little plastic clip and a little fine little ribbon wire that if you put any force on it, it's going to rip. And now you're on the search for a part that was they only made a few hundred thousand of them in the lifetime of that device.
Yeah, they sold the company.
Right. I mean, like that little tear in that ribbon wire is making you throw away an $800 device And it was because you didn't take the time to be careful and release all the clips correctly in the correct order.
Well, we've known that for years. I mean, taking the things apart is no problem at all.
Right.
Just putting it back together.
That's right. But it should always be easy. When you're plugging in cables, it should always be easy. And one of the nice things about the Thunderbolt and the Lightning cables that Apple does, the USB-C, is that these are reversible cables. That in itself is a good reason to be upgrading your equipment. The ability to grab a cable and plug it in without thinking about what's up or down with it is, I mean, that's powerful. That's.
I just put a dotted net.
Yeah, that's that definitely works as well.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm overwhelmed with security, having been hacked. And I've been told that if you have a cell phone and you connect the cell phone with your computer, that you have extra security. Is that true?
I'm not sure what that would mean. Yeah. What has been going on now is you don't have privacy if you have a cell phone. I mean, I don't know. I mean, security. We could talk a lot about but you definitely don't have any privacy. I mean, your movements are definitely tracked. I mean, it's become very clear. It's been, and just like we were talking about last week with that New York Times article that was showing you visuals on how an individual data point could plot you from your house to your gym to your doctor, right? And how even though, I mean, this was the information that's legal to sell and buy because it doesn't have Bob Hicks attached to that data point. But the fact that you left from a specific location 500 times, you know, over the last month makes it pretty clear who that is.
And where you're going. I get these little pop-ups, not all the time, but occasionally you are 20 minutes from home. Oh, you are miles. You are 4 miles from home.
Yep. Great.
There
was a congressional hearing. I don't know if anyone listened to it, but it was very interesting.
Okay.
About the tracking from one end of this table to the other end of the table. They can tell you, track that.
Right. Well, without a doubt, we've all showed up with mobile devices. If you read the New York Times article we were talking about last week, you'll see pictures where there's a church and all these data points, I mean, they're all sitting in pews. There, you would see us as all these data points around a table in tequilas right now.
That was a test.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no doubt that that's what's going on, and that's why last week I was talking so much about how we really have reached a point where this stuff is too easy to do, so they're doing it.
Could we have a session sometime maybe on how to turn all that off?
I mean, we can talk about it, but the truth is you can't turn all that off. I mean, that was my point, is that we are now living in a world where turning it off is ridiculously hard to do. It's in fact, we need to change our culture into one where we're massaging when this data is appropriate to be used and when it's inappropriate to be used. I'm sorry.
No, the frightening part of that is that the newer upcoming generations are accepting it as normal.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right.
They're okaying it, but not saying anything.
They're giving them freedom.
Well, they've grown up in a world where they know everything's being tracked. And so they modify their behaviors based on the fact that all this information is out there and being tracked. If they need to, in their social groups, if they need to keep something from somebody, they act appropriate because they know so many, their Instagram, their Facebook chats, these things are all being out there. They're in public. And so they modify their behavior so that their public persona reflects the way that they want it to be reflected. We are at a point where we need to lay down rules on how to protect ourselves from the misuse of this data. Because the data is there, and I'm a firm believer in if it's technically possible to do, they're going to do it. And they being whoever. But if you have the technology is going to be used. Mm-hmm. So we need technology to block these activities so that there's something like a one-button solution to not being tracked. But we also need rules in place so the technology is not being used against us. So
the absolute worst is Google.
Well, that's a tough one to say, because what Google does, they don't actually have humans on the front line doing anything. It's pretty obvious. The amount of things that go through their filter by accident, there wasn't anybody with a moral compass making that decision. It was an algorithm that was making that decision. Now, the question is the algorithm less intrusive than actual humans? Because you look at places like Apple and Facebook. Facebook's the best example. They've got huge warehouses of people that are staring at images. I mean, these click you can't call them click farms, but they're these groves of people, and their whole job is to decide whether an image is appropriate, whether a post is appropriate.
Well, I can't understand. They're talking about antitrust with Google, Facebook, and Amazon right today, okay? Mm-hmm. In other words, limiting how many businesses they can buy up because they become so powerful. Now, what I'm really concerned about is I do not put my banking password on LastPass. Mm-hmm. I'm fearful of that. I will put any other kind of password because of my experience in San Antonio, where we didn't have a place to live. We could not get in the door.
Oh, with the Airbnb you're talking about?
Airbnb.
Yeah.
We could not get in because somehow or other we didn't have the right password.
Right.
Okay. So with Google or LastPass, if they can take it in, they can distribute it.
Well, they can distribute it to you. I mean, again, to reiterate how LastPass works, everything is encrypted. They can't see it. All they can see is an encrypted blob of data.
Who is they?
LastPass. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They, even though they maintain the servers and the service, they don't actually have the ability to look inside that encrypted blob.
They can't hack it?
They at the moment they can't. And this is an assumption that has to be made, because there are security reviewers that have looked at what they're doing and have vetted it as being secure using the latest in what we understand
that
about encryption.
Means, yes. I think that it can't be hacked.
That's right.
That's what it means. Yes.
That's what it means. It can't be hacked. Now, the thing is with encryption.
But it can be. That's
well,
the thing.
It can't at the moment. As long as they implement encryption with the correct standard, it can't be hacked at the moment.
Somebody will figure it out.
Somebody will figure it out. Actually, something will figure it out. Because the math. Yeah.
He'll be a multi-millionaire.
The thing is, with encryption, the math is trivial. The amount of security that encryption can give you now with just trivially doing the math, it's so much more complicated to undo the encryption without the password. The ability to make something indecipherable is simple. And the ability to make it decipherable without that key is impossible. It's just insanely difficult because of the math. And so that's why I can say to you firmly, as long as they've implemented the encryption correctly, it is not hackable at the moment. What we'll see in the future is we'll see some crazy quantum supercomputer come along that can make a guess at these passwords. But it really will be, it will be like the supercharged, it'll be such ridiculous power that's required to do it. And then what they'll do is they will increment the encryption standard by another power, which mathematically is trivial to do with a computer. And then they won't have a computer that can undo that encryption.
Well, the reason I'm mentioning that is I have a boat, mm-hmm. but I'm not wealthy, okay?
Right.
Okay, and I want to leave LastPass as a provision. You can pass it on to your kin. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that looks like, to me, a really good thing for me able to pass the boat on to my daughter.
By putting a will in there or something? Yeah, maybe. Right.
But if you don't have that password, then all is lost. And then who gets it? I don't know.
Right. Well, and the question of a copy of a will in a format like that, whether it's legal or not, you would probably still have to have some legal will beside it. Mm-hmm. But if you were concerned about that getting lost or not in the right hands, then why not include that in your list of documents that are in LastPass? I think that with schemes like LastPass, you're more at a risk of implementing it incorrectly. And what I mean by that is you install LastPass on a mobile device and you save the password on it. So anybody that grabs your mobile device has access to your list of it's essentially it's the virtual equivalent of leaving your black book in a restaurant somewhere. Now anybody can open up that book and go through your list of passwords. So you have to implement LastPass correctly, but if you do, if you follow good security in using it, then it is very secure. There's no reason to think that it could be hacked. It's more likely your device will get hacked, and that's how they got access to LastPass.
Couldn't a disgruntled programmer hack it?
A disgruntled programmer could, if they were in the right position, interrupt that flow of data. That is a genuine concern, would be a disgruntled programmer that was in the right position could slipstream, like turn off encryption into the next app, the next update of LastPass you happen to download, and then start recording everything in plain text. I can imagine a scenario like that, but you can also imagine a security company is really concerned about those kind of... that's what's left. After encryption, those are the kinds of things that they need to worry about in their company.
Backdoors.
Like a human backdoor.
Programmer sits there, I'm tired of putting in 32 characters every time I need to get into this, so I build a backdoor that I sit there and say, red, and it pops right up, or whatever.
Well, again, the sheer nature of the encryption, you're talking about a blob of stuff you can't read being stored on their servers. So where it would have to be compromised is in the in and the out. That's where the because after the fact, it's unreadable. So it has to be compromised as you're putting the information in or as you're getting the information out, because the storage is unbreakable without many supercomputers and a lot of genius behind it. The equation is so unbalanced, that's the reason it's secure. So there's a higher likelihood that somebody would compromise the LastPass plugin. You would be duped into believing you need that update. You would put in your credentials, and it wouldn't, and at that point your passwords would be siphoned off somewhere else. If you follow what I mean, it's that door, that in and out to the data, the before the encryption is where the compromise, because there is no hack for hacking the encryption. There's no way to hack the math. that can't be done. It's all implementation that can be hacked. So when you hear these compromises, either they're not using encryption, they're not using the right encryption, or they are using the right encryption and they implemented it poorly. It's not the encryption itself that is getting hacked.
How long has LastPass been around?
Forever.
Yeah. At least a couple years.
I would say the early 2000s is when it first came on the scene. It was a private thing for a long. It was one guy doing it for many years, and then he finally sold it and then stayed on board. I think he's still on board with it.
You were so positive about other things. Can we get off this paranoid attitude of protecting ourselves and get on with a new subject?
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's... That's where we're at.
You start if you like.
Go ahead.
Does anybody have any new Mac devices? Does anybody buy an iPhone X? Yeah, you've got an iPhone X?
My partner did, but he passed away about a week after he bought it. So I have it with me. I can't look at it. I can't open it because, of course, he set it up to recognize his face. Is that something you can help me with?
I don't think I can help you with it, but I think an Apple store can with a death certificate.
Yeah, that's the only way.
Yeah. And I don't think LastPass could help you with that either, unfortunately.
Death mask.
Yeah. I mean, the well, I guess, I mean, that's a really good LastPass. What could have happened is he could have put a he or she could have put a note, a secure note. This is my iPhone password. And his last pass, his or her last pass, could be sent to you as next of kin.
He didn't share that note with me.
Yeah, yeah. But I it's a good thing to bring up because these are things that we're all thinking about. I mean, I've got kids and a wife, and I've got passwords all over the place, and I would hate for something to happen and them not to have access to those things. So these are all good things for a way to introduce LastPass as a solution to that kind of problem. Would be to make a note in LastPass because as a next of kin, LastPass will send you access to that chain of passwords, and it could include that kind of note.
Would persistence work in the case of our daughter passing away? Persistence with Microsoft, we actually did get finally after a month, we finally got
access.
Yes.
I'm sure a death certificate really does help in these cases, and they want to help you. Customer support wants to help you with these problems. They don't want you to be having any harder problems. If you can produce a death certificate, they'll immediately start helping you with the problem.
Now, I don't mean to be nitpicking here. I was merely a partner, so a death certificate does not show me as next of kin. Is Apple going to be picky about that?
Well, a death certificate doesn't show anyone as next of kin.
Yeah,
I don't have a separate document supporting that I am, in fact.
But you have the phone in hand, and you have their death certificate. It seems like you're going to get some satisfaction.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, and if it's not immediately easy, make a stink because. What a ridiculous thing to be having problems with. Yeah. And you have this $1,000 device in your hand, and it's a dead slab of e-waste if they don't help you solve it.
All of you, make sure that your partners or your spouses or your children or whoever do have access to your passwords or something like that. I've had a lot of trouble in the past 2 months just because we hadn't written stuff down or gotten stuff.
I think this is one of the biggest features of LastPass is the ability to assign a next of kin.
But that's also an advantage of using the external hard drive for backup is that I have my passwords on that same hard drive, not on my regular computer.
Really?
Yeah. Did everybody get that? We know how to get into Chester's stuff. just need that hard drive.
Well, he just advertised it to the whole world. Good luck.
Oh, no. Puts that out of the internet.
It's just external. Went out in the world.
So I bring this up because Apple has just announced problems with the iPhone X.
Oh, no. How unusual.
Yeah. In case you haven't been following Apple News, they've discontinued the X model, and what they have is the XS and the XR. And I keep saying X, and I'm really, as a tech person, I'm supposed to say 10. I'm supposed to say the iPhone XS and the iPhone XR. But I just can't help the iteration. I love XS. Because it's over $1,000 for that phone. So yeah. If anything should be labeled XS, it should be the iPhone.
You had a roll.
So there's a problem with the screen on some models where you can't get any response from touching it. It responds intermittently, or it responds with no touching. It just starts shooting off things as though you were touching it.
You got to touch it lightly.
Yeah, got to touch it right. You got to do correct touch. At the same time, they announced a problem with their 13-inch MacBook Pros. If you've got one of these new MacBook Pros, this is what Gary's bought.
Is that what he just bought?
That's what he bought.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons I'm bringing it up, so that we have it on the record, so people have access to the information. I'll put a link to the article that talks about it. But if you bought a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and between June 2017 to June 2018, that has a hard drive that's either the 128 gigabyte or the 256 gigabyte, which I'm not sure which one he's got, then there's a chance that hard drive will stop working. There's a chance, at the very least, you may lose data on that device.
I don't think he ever got it to work at all, did he?
He did.
I don't know.
Good,
we're talking about Levingston, right? The Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did get it to work, but then had other issues because it was bought as a solution to a problem with his old Mac.
Oh, good.
And so they moved all the data over to the new Mac, and now he's got other problems with it. I did fix his old Mac, and so he's able to use that exactly the way as before.
That 13-inch, he wants to get rid of it.
Yeah, this might be a good reason to just take it back. He might be able to just bring it into an Apple store and go, no, it hasn't solved my problems, and now I hear that there's a potential problem with the hard drive. I'm just done with this.
I'm still having the same problem I had last week. On startup, I get a Microsoft Edge. I noticed the other day it was Bing, so I went in and it was supposed to disable Bing. Now I get Microsoft Store.
But you have got something when you turn on the computer that's saying pull up a web address or pull up the Edge, and so it's like a startup item. If you go into Task Manager, if you click with the right mouse button on the taskbar and choose Task Manager from the menu, it will bring up an app that keeps track of everything that's running and the performance of your computer. And if all you see is a list, click the option to see more advanced information. Because the difference between the basic information and the advanced information is amazing. The basic information is a list of things running. That's it. You see the advanced information and it's tab after tab after tab. It's what's currently running in the system, a history of everything that's run in the system to date, and there is a tab for startup items. And you can look in that list, and you can enable and disable things right from that list. I would look in that list and see if there's a web address that's trying to start up or Edge is trying to start up.
I looked in the standard for, like you said, I've never been in the advanced.
Well, I think I don't think the standard view lets you see the startup items, so I think you looked at the advanced. Because after you turn it on to the advanced items, it stays on until you turn it off. So I suspect you were looking in the right spot. So the other thing that I would do is I would look in programs like CCleaner and Glary Utilities. Those kinds of utilities have really in-depth startup where they take all the different... Windows is horrible when it comes to things starting up. It's all over the operating system. There is not... They've never standardized on the way to start up something when the computer starts up.
You can't disable Edge. It says that right.
Say that again?
You can't disable Edge.
You can't disable Edge.
No, you can't.
But you will be able to shortly. I don't know if you've been reading the news, but...
Couldn't this problem just be in startup?
Right. It could be. It could be a folder in a folder called startup. There. It could be in startup.
Just click on your programs and go to startup. There might even be an entry in there. It's easy to delete it.
I'm looking for it because is there still a startup folder?
I think so. Yeah.
I'm looking for it right now in Windows 10.
Yeah.
Start. That's. I'm not seeing an actual folder called startup anymore.
No,
I can't remember how to get to it. Yeah, I mean, in traditional Windows, up till Windows 10, there's always been a folder called startup.
Yeah.
And it would be a likely culprit because you could inadvertently drag the Edge icon into the startup folder. And that would be enough to launch it every time the computer started up.
Well, it also depends whether your computer was upgraded from an older version
That's a really good point, too. If it started as Windows 7 or Windows 8 and you upgraded to Windows 10, you may very well have a startup folder, and in classic Microsoft fashion, it may still be starting things up, even if it's not included in...
It just happened. I mean, what hasn't been... only been a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden it started popping up.
Well, I'd look for a startup folder to see if there was one, but I think that if you look with something like CCleaner or Glary Utilities, they're going to show you the startup folder as well. They're also going to show you scheduled... because you have scheduled tasks, and one of the scheduled tasks is when the computer starts up. And so it'll show you those kinds of things as well.
I can see it in my mind's eye, but I can't remember how to get to it. But across the top, one of the buttons up there would be startup. You click on it, and it'll show you all of the programs you have, whether they're in the startup or not. And if they are in the startup, it'll tell you whether they're using a lot of capacity or not.
Yeah, this is, you're talking about the task manager?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's task manager.
Yeah, it's task manager, and it's got tabs.
At the top.
Yeah. The task manager is pretty cool for just seeing how healthy your computer is. Yeah. You can switch to performance, and you'll get a graph of your CPU, how much the brain is working, how much your storage is working. Sometimes it's not very clear why your computer is moving slow, and you bring up the task manager under performance, and you can see your hard drive's pegged out at 100%. Oh. And maybe you've got an antivirus program that's going out of control, and it's just perpetually scanning. Or maybe your backup is failing, and so it's perpetually trying to make a backup, or something of that nature. Or maybe your updates are failing, and it's continually trying to... I just dealt with that on another computer, where you turn on the computer, and it worked fine for a little while. And then after that, it was just molasses. It was this total dog to try and do anything with. And what I discovered was the updates were corrupted. And the computer is, in a standard installation, when you start up a computer for the first time, be it after it's been off, not a reboot, when you first start it up, one of the first jobs it'll go out and do is check for updates. If you have a library of updates waiting to be installed, it has to verify all those updates are still current before it can start the update process. If you don't have a library of updates sitting there waiting, it has to start downloading. If that library is corrupted, it won't update, it won't download, but it will verify. And so every time you start up the computer, after a few moments, you'll hear cooling fans come on, things will appear as though they're running as hot and hard as they can, and the computer's doing nothing. And to pull up a web page is ridiculous, and to try and do an activity is ridiculous. And we all experience this at some time, but we normally experience it after the second Tuesday of every month when Microsoft pushes out their updates. And your computer feels a little sluggish for a week after that as it's trying to get the updates installed. But after they're installed, your computer goes back to working the way you expect it to. When your updates are corrupted, it's all the same behavior every day you start up the computer because it never gets installed.
And it shuts down my Outlook 2007.
Now that's strange too, yeah. Especially when it just goes back to working correctly without doing anything. I have run out of topics.
You've done a good job.
Well, thank you. I hope I've covered things that you guys find useful over the holiday season.
I have a question.
Yes.
I get to ask it because I have all this stuff. What's the difference in third grade terms, or second grade, between bandwidth and internet speed?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Oh, really? Now, it becomes more complicated when you say bandwidth cap.
Cap.
Cap. Okay. Because that incorrectly refers to the amount of data you're allowed to download over a period of time.
Well, let me tell you how I was experiencing this, using Smart DNS and watching Amazon Prime.
Okay.
middle of a show, it would stop and it would say, you don't have sufficient bandwidth to watch this program. Do you want to continue anyway? And, of course, I would click yes, and sometimes it would come back, sometimes it wouldn't. So we finally went to Telcel and upgraded.
Or Telmex.
Telmex, excuse me. And it's gone.
Right. So bandwidth by itself refers to your internet speed.
Okay.
The bandwidth cap incorrectly refers to, always incorrectly, refers to the amount of data that you're allotted over a period of time. And you talk about it a lot with cell phone with cell phone contracts. You have a bandwidth cap.
Verizon's that way.
Yeah. You're allowed to use up to 8 gigabytes, for example, over a month.
Right.
And then
you have to buy more if you want.
Or it dials down your bandwidth speed. Yeah. It's a lot of time you hear people in Alaska. We have one cable company that for all of Alaska called GCI. GCI has a bandwidth cap on all their internet plans.
Oh.
You would never leave like YouTube running 24/7. It would just whittle away your cap. But I say incorrect because there should be better terminology. Bandwidth cap would correctly refer to the maximum speed that you can go. But nothing in marketing uses that terminology.
Okay.
In marketing, bandwidth cap always refers to how much you're allotted over a period of time.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
Faxing. I have a friend.
Did you just say faxing?
Faxing. I have a friend who downloaded some kind of an app.
Okay.
So that they could fax.
Yep.
I don't know what that app is.
Come on.
But I'm trying to get it to operate. We're using Verizon's jetpack. And somebody told them that was the problem.
Know it already.
They would be wrong.
Are you the chocolate police?
What's the app that somebody should actually download?
You know, this is a good question. I ran into faxing issues because that's how I had to vote in the last election, was by fax. And I found out it's very difficult to find a fax machine anymore.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just scan it and send it?
Well, that's what I ended up doing. And that's what you're referring to, actually, when you're thinking of a virtual fax system, is the ability to send. I mean, that, in fact, to me, I always thought that was the most ridiculous part of the whole faxing thing at this point, is without a doubt, I'm using a virtual fax system to fax an actual fax to another virtual fax system. Because there is nobody, especially with voting, they don't have a room full of fax machines that are receiving abroad, out-of-state absentee ballots. They have purchased fax services from the phone provider, right? And they're using a service to download and print. So I find this whole topic just really funny, because the actual thing being sent is this arcane technology that we've had for 30 years easily, but the way it's being produced and received is fictitious. It's just creating this virtual fax machine on both sides. I don't know what the best recommendation is. I posed this to Viva San Carlos in the last election and got some great responses, and I used one of those responses to send. And it was a free service out there that was a web page where I was able to upload the scans that I made as a fax. I was able to upload the images as a fax and address them and send them out. And that was a free service that allowed me 3 attempts at a time.
It's faxzero.com.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that's what it is. It was just on Viva.
Okay. Yeah. And it worked really well. And it worked better than an actual fax machine. Actually, Barbara Reeve was really nice and allowed me to use her fax machine.
Is the faxzero an actual zero or a
spelling. When you're bad, I think it's spelled.
Factzero.com. You scan it to it and send it. I've got two fax machines at the house and couldn't get them to work the last time. So I did that. Cost me $1, I think.
It didn't cost me anything.
Why
they had a free...
pages.
Okay, yeah. It's based on how many pages.
Well, if you don't have a hard line, it's a fax machine anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what this person was dealing with.
Right, right.
So I can recommend maybe this factzero.com.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How much does it cost?
A limitation on how many you can do?
That's true. Well, the free is the limitation. They.
I think you get 5 pages for free.
Okay.
And then after that, they charge it. But they tell you how much it's going to cost.
Okay.
You want to do it? Yeah, all right, or no.
In my experience, because I was trying, and this is the other thing that pisses me off about these virtual fax systems, is I kept getting a busy signal.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, that happens.
Oh.
Well, not when you're voting. It doesn't have to happen. It's the phone company. It's like calling Telmex and getting a busy signal. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's a fictitious... I
put him down on the coffee today.
Yeah. Roll, I told you.
But no, seriously, it's a fictitious set of supply, right? I mean, it's not a literal problem of supply. They have virtually as much supply as they want, but they set some limit on the number of dial-ins there could be, and all they'd have to do is set that limit a little higher. And we wouldn't be dealing with busy signals faxing in our ballots.
Well, now in Windows 10.
Wait. The reason I say this is because using that Factzero, you would get 3 attempts, and then it would fail, and it would send me an email saying it was failing. It'd show me a failed. And what I discovered very quickly is I could hit the back button on the web page. And it would still have my fax ready to go, everything addressed, and all I had to do was hit that same fax button again to try again. I think I might have had to add one piece of detail, I can't remember, but it was not complicated to hit the back button and start that three. And I did that.
Like a draft, almost, in an email, like a draft.
Well, I mean, it's failing because it gets a busy signal, so it tries again. And it tries again 3 times, and then it fails. But with the back button, I was able to try again very quickly those 3 attempts. So I just hit it again, and then it would try again 3 times. And eventually it went through, and I'm like, yay. Even though if anybody following the Alaskan election, it didn't count for anything. I just wasted my evening.
On the bottom row, there is an icon that says fax and something else.
Yes. You're talking about in Windows?
Yeah, does that work?
Like one of your printers?
Yeah.
So it does actually work, but what it requires is for you to own a modem that can connect to a phone line out of the computer you're running it on.
So it's just like having a fax machine.
Inside your computer.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I use something called PAM fax, P-A-M.
PAM fax.
But you do pay, but it's not very much. But how do you receive faxes?
Well, you know what's funny is, and this is not a recommendation, okay, let me prefix that with this, do not use this service. It's been around forever. It's called eFax.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They don't leave you alone. I've had an eFax account since the early 2000s. I continue to get junk mail from them. The phone number has been active, I mean, since before I had children. The phone number has been active. And I just recently got curious and found just a whole collection of... Like there are actually people still marketing through fax machines, right? Like car washes and pest control and all these junk faxes.
Yeah.
They do not leave you alone. And what you can take advantage of in eFax is you can have an eFax phone number that people can send you stuff at. But there's nothing free as far as sending. So if you need to send something else out, it's not, you have to pay for the service to send it out.
Right.
I wouldn't give them money because they won't leave you alone. They will continue to, that phone number stays active regardless. You haven't had that problem? What I discovered it because I was just tooling through my junk mail and found e-faxes accumulating in my junk mail. I was like, wow, this is... I'm like, boy, they were really persistent in marketing. And then I discover, no, that's absolutely me that's supposed to be receiving those faxes. They are telling me I'm getting faxes through their service. This isn't like some game. This is their legitimate service. And so I go and I get a new password just because I'm curious. And I get, and they've got an app for the phone and you can receive your faxes there. But all you're receiving is all this crap that they've allowed people to send to your fax machine.
My number doesn't seem to work anymore.
What would be the advantage of using a fax machine?
Right.
Nowadays. There isn't any.
There is none.
Yeah.
Shall I include that?
Hardly anybody has the ability to
carve my phone. Yeah, it's like sitting next to a
I would be really interested in seeing the statistics, because what do you want to bet the probability of sitting next to a printer that can scan your document is much higher than your ability to find a fax machine within 50 miles of your house?
Yeah, that's true.
All right, we'll call it an end. Thank you guys for all coming to the last computer meeting of 2018.
Okay.
Sure. Let me put a conclusion on this, and I'll get your data there. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15-ish. Here in Tequila's in San Carlos. If you're in San Carlos, I recommend Tequila's. They got great food, nice people working here. They got really fast Wi-Fi. They've got a fiber optic connection that can sometimes go up to 40 megabits a second. So if you're looking for high-speed internet, this is a great place to find it. I get nothing for saying that. We're just happy to have a place to be. If you're looking for computer help anywhere on the internet, I'd appreciate it if you'd look for help from me. Find me at internationalcs.net. I think I got the email finally working correctly. But you can email me at scott@internationalcs.net. If you're looking for anything about our club, check out sccclub.org. I forgot to mention, I'll mention at the beginning of our next meeting, there is a web address for our YouTube channel called youtube.sccclub.org. You can go right to the YouTube channel from typing in youtube.sccclub.org. And if you're looking for the audio, if you're looking for the audio stream live, you can type in audio.sccclub.org, and it'll take you to this audio stream that we do every time we have a meeting. So that's it. We'll see you guys after the first of the year. We'll see you in 2019. Until then, tech on.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad a todos. Y regresamos en el año 2019. Hasta la próxima vez.
Did your wife tell you we talked about your citizenship the day we voted?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the one of the few times. That's the only reason I would want to be a Mexican citizen. I want to be able to vote in these things. Okay, that's all.